The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
From the pocket, launching downfield, underthrown and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone, and Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide. The final second ticks away, and how of an appropriate ending is that? We sack Young on the last play of the game. Dogs are winners. A national championship for a new generation of Bulldogs. How about that? Final score, 33-18. The slipper changes feet, and Georgia is crowned the national champion for the first time in 41 years.
Oh, wow. I mean, even before we hear Ryan Bingham singing South Side of Heaven, if you're a Georgia fan, both of those calls from Chris Fowler, first of ESPN on the Kelee Ringo pick six to seal it, and then Scott Howard as part of the Georgia Bulldogs radio network on the second one. The final call there, the sack of Bryce Young to end it. Georgia, your 2021 national champions of college football, 33-18 over Alabama. Just a magical night for the Dogs there in Indianapolis. And really wanted to just to spend almost this entire podcast today as kind of a tribute to not only the Dogs doing what they did in this game, but also to as well let you hear from a pair of people who they don't hide it, how they feel about this university. Both proud alums of the school. One of them, a letterman in David Pollack. The other one, a proud alum of the school, and now a man who has found a lot of fame on the internet for good reasons, because he is incredibly talented, incredibly creative. He is Wes Blankenship. So we're going to let you hear from both of those guys today. But, you know, just wanted to talk about it to start the show today, this game. From the perspective that I saw in the press box, as sat there, corner of the end zone, right over where Alabama took the field in their tunnel for the game, was where the auxiliary press box was. And just starting from the top of the game, I mean, immediately you get into the stadium. Oh my gosh, was it cold in Indianapolis? But as soon as you got in, you were consumed in the electricity of the atmosphere of just seeing the shade of crimson for Alabama fans there, seeing all the red and black for Georgia fans that were there. It was a majority Georgia crowd. There is no question about it. I mean, I've heard people say 65-35. I'd probably go split the difference a little bit of go 60-40. Actually, no. I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say 70-30. But somebody even trying to tell me, no, dude, it was 80-20. Regardless, it was an overwhelming Georgia crowd for this game. And you sit down, you get in. And I think if nothing else from the Georgia side, the fans, it was kind of a let this be it. Like, let this be the one. And there were some who were confident. There were some, I don't know, it's Alabama. Because let's be honest now, Alabama has very much become for the Bulldogs what Florida was for the longest time, even in their own conference. That it was, man, you know, we're here in Jacksonville. I mean, I go back to the 2017 season when I went down to Jacksonville for the game. And remember, too, it was that week that Jim McElwain had made the death threats line, and there was thought that Florida wanted to move on from him. Their season was not going the way that they wanted it to go. But still, Georgia fans were nervous. And I'd ask every single one of them, why are you nervous? The response was almost an overwhelming, it's Jacksonville, it's Florida. Anything can happen, because at the time the Dogs were working on a perfect season. They didn't want it to be derailed, so they were a little nervous for it. And then of course Georgia went out there that night and just absolutely took it to Florida. But You know, it's one of those things as a program that you have to finally meet a nemesis, and soon enough, you make it a rivalry. This one, for the longest time, it was one-sided, and it had been going back to even 2008 that Alabama completely had Georgia's number. I mean, there was that. There was 2012. I remember being on the sideline for that game against Alabama in the SEC championship game, the long pass from A.J. McCarron to Amari Cooper, and then Georgia, with just a handful of seconds left, able to get it into the red zone and nearly having a chance in a ball thrown to Chris Conley. It was tipped a little bit at the line. Conley lost his footing as he caught the football because you could definitely tell that Conley was trying to catch the ball, immediately get out of bounds, and give themselves one more chance to go to the end zone. But as it stood, just bad luck got them in that part. They were losers and had to watch Alabama go on to the BCS championship game and take on a Notre Dame team that Georgia would have crushed. And it was just an unfortunate ending to the season for them there. But, you know, I'm not going to take us down the bad memory lane of this game. I think just go through this game and just remember Monday night for what it was, where, you know, Georgia finally able to break through in the third quarter and get that touchdown, which, by the way, to going back and rewatching this game, do people realize how close that touchdown was to not happening? Stetson Bennett kind of bobbled the snap a little bit as he got the football and turned around and handed it off to Zamir White to plow into the end zone, which he had Jalen Carter and also Jordan Davis on the field as a jumbo package there to try to provide a little bit of extra beef to get him into the end zone. And that nearly didn't happen. And Georgia able to get in. But then, you know, there was the Cameron Latu touchdown after the fumble that was called on Stetson Bennett, which, by the way, too, unpopular opinion for many of you, it was a fumble. I'm sorry. It was a fumble. Now that I look at it again and I see that the ball, I mean, it's one of those that, you know, it's the hand is coming forward, yes, but it's, do you still have possession of the football? If he had had just a couple of extra fingers on the football and that ball's going forward, then you could very easily argue, well, no, he's trying to make a throw. He's hit as he throws and the ball's coming out. It's kind of like, you know, if you ever watch baseball and a catcher on a pop throw to second base loses control of the baseball and it you know, kind of goes up in the air a little bit, maybe goes a little bit behind him. That's what it looked like there, was almost kind of like that situation in baseball, or even, you know, a shortstop or a second baseman trying to turn a double play there, and on the transfer, the ball comes out. That's kind of what it looked like a little bit. And, you know, Georgia surrenders the touchdown there. But I think that the thing that most impressed me about Stetson Bennett was his command, where it was almost at that time. I mean, we only see stuff like this usually from Tom Brady, from Peyton Manning, from Aaron Rodgers, from in basketball for the longest time, from Kobe, from Michael Jordan, from the greats, where it's situations like this. It's not looking great. Okay, well, just wait until I get the football or the basketball in my hands, and let's see how it looks from there. Stetson Bennett played the best football, not only this season, but of his Georgia career in those final 10 minutes of the game. The touchdown to A.D. Mitchell, that football couldn't have been thrown any better if you did not have any defenders on A.D. Mitchell right there. He completely put it right in the slot. Mitchell able to catch the ball and go into the end zone for the score. I mean, the drive down the field, I get it that you were aided by penalties as well, but just a masterful drive on the final offensive possession there for Georgia in just an absolutely outstanding play-calling series by Todd Monken on that final drive there, where Georgia realized, hey, we're finding success now running the football. We need to continue to run the football. And that's what I said. I'd even put out on Twitter when that happened, do not throw the football again the rest of this drive. You are gashing them, and you are crushing them. I mean, you just took sledgehammers to that Alabama defense to be able to get them 4, 5, 6, 7 yards a carry and continue to keep the chains moving and continue to chew down the time in order to be able to get you into the situation where you could maybe even be kneeling on it at the end of that drive. But instead, you get it to the point where you're able to swing it out to the left. Brock Bowers, being Brock Bowers, he just unbelievable all season long and able to get into the end zone. But I think a couple of other things, too, as well, in this game that stand out to me is, number one, the response of the defense, the play of the linebackers, just unbelievable. I mean, that group is what made that defense move in this game. And something that reminds me in this game, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later with David Pollack, something that really stood out to me was a play that happened on that, I believe it was the drive before the Latu touchdown, but I think it was what set up the field goal there in the fourth quarter, where a play before on a third down, it was a mix-up between Channing Tindall and N'Kobe Dean, where Tindall ran into Dean and a touchdown was almost scored by Alabama. And you saw N'Kobe Dean just absolutely lay in to Channing Tindall. And Tindall was, all right, yeah, you know, I messed up. The very next play, Channing Tindall sacks Bryce Young. So, I mean, it was plays like that in this game for this Georgia team that just showed you that they were different. That, I mean, in the past, something like that happens, that's a touchdown. Or at the very least, it's something that maybe festers for this team and they're not able to get past it. In that case right there, it was, all right, hey, we got away with one. Now's an opportunity for us to really make sure they don't get into the end zone. And Channing Tindall made a play. Nolan Smith, the final sack of the game. I mean, he was unbelievable in this game. I mean, the names go on and on of players that you look at for this Georgia defense on Monday night. Quay Walker was outstanding in this game. I mean, Lewis Cine obviously getting the defensive honors that he got for this game. He was unbelievable. I mean, again, it's one of those things that if you want to put on the highlight tape of everybody that made meaningful plays on that defense in this game, I think that you're probably going to have a very long list of credits at the end of that highlight tape of who made meaningful plays for Georgia, because they pretty much all did. But I think another part of it as well, offensively, of something that just was an outstanding play in this game, I really, truly believe that the decision in the second half to go with Broderick Jones at left tackle and to put Jamari Sawyer at right guard helped win this football game, because they finally realized we got to switch it up a little bit. We've got to be able to give ourselves a little bit more push on the interior and get this running game going. And that decision paid dividends, because you had a team who started off the game not running the football very well. You had a team who ended the game running the football incredibly well. 140 yards rushing offense for Georgia in this game. Only 30 for Alabama. When it looked like early with Brian Robinson Jr. that they were going to be able to get going, and then it was the second half where Georgia said, yeah, we're going to put it on your Heisman Trophy winner, and he's going to be the guy that's going to have to help you win this football game. And Jameson Williams going down was just an awful thing to have happen. But, you know, it's also, too, Alabama is a talented enough football team with or without Jameson Williams and John Metchie on the field. They were still in it and still had an opportunity to win this game, even while not having two of your better receiving options on the field. And it just goes to show you what people know about Nick Saban's program as a whole. They recruit incredibly well. They develop incredibly well. And then it's also, too, a situation where you earn your time on the field. And a lot of these guys that were thrust into action, they earn their time on the field. And that's going to pay off in the future, because mark my words right now, Alabama will be back in the college football playoff in 2022, 2023. That's not necessarily something that is a hot take there. It's just the talent that they have coming back. But also, too, what have we seen from Nick Saban whenever things don't go his way? It doesn't usually stay going down that road. Usually they're able to bounce back. And I think with the talent they have coming back, I don't think there's any doubt that preseason we're going to be seeing Alabama as number one. And then again, we're going to be seeing them in January playing in the college football playoff and probably playing for it all in Los Angeles next year. So just an outstanding night for Georgia. Unbelievable game for them. 33-18 was the final in that one. As like I said, I've had a chance to catch up with two guys that the Dogs mean a lot to them. One of them is Wes Blankenship. The other one is David Pollack. Let's hear from David Pollack first, and then we're going to hear from Wes Blankenship. And then when we come back, I want to talk to you, the Georgia fan, about Monday night even more. Let's hear from David first right here on the Southern Beat. I'm Dan Matthews. As promised, right now we are pleased to be joined by this man. You saw him all day and night throughout the coverage on ESPN leading up to the College Football Playoff National Championship game, seeing his beloved Georgia Bulldogs crowned national champions this season. He is, of course, former letterman and part of College Game Day and the coverage on ESPN. He is David Pollack. David, you landed yet? Are you still floating in the atmosphere after Monday night?
It's a pretty good experience, man. It was pretty fun. You know, I've been on the opposite end of this too, you know, back in 2017. That wasn't near as much fun with the finish with Georgia and Alabama, but no, it was awesome, man. What a season for Georgia. I just walking through the behind the bench when Ringo got that interception, and I literally 4 out of every 10 adult, a grown person was crying. And to see how much that means to people, and to see the generational, you know, the grandparents to sons to grandsons and hugging, and just how much it meant. It's crazy, man. It's nuts. It's really, really cool. 41 years is a long time, and you saw our broadcast, the curse and the Red Sox and all that stuff that went into it. And, you know, Kirby coming home to his university, and you could see how much pride he took in it, and the Dogs finally getting it done was pretty dang cool.
I think Kirby touched on it a little bit on Tuesday when he addressed the media, where he had talked about what it meant to win it and then also win it against those guys. Do you feel like that it was almost needed to be this way, that if nothing else, if not in the playoff championship game, even back last month in the SEC championship game, if they had just done it then, that would have been like Manning finally getting over on Brady, the Red Sox finally beating the Yankees to move on, all these other examples that we've seen in sports?
Yeah, I mean, dude, that stuff's real. And you get when you get around that, Kurt, which I had it when I was at Georgia with the Florida game, you know, like we always lost. And you get to that week, and what do you do? It happens as it becomes a mental thing, right? Like it becomes a mental block, and you think about it and you talk about it. And I'm not going to lie, just like everybody else in the stand and every other Georgia fan, when the Stetson Bennett fumble happened, the touchdown happened, you're like, oh, here we go. Like, this is not good. You know, we got to find a way, got to make some plays. And so I think, you know, it's a real thing. You get over it. And like, you see people too, once they get that first one, you know, the Red Sox got a bunch more, you know, and, you know, it just takes the pressure off, and you don't have to worry about that as much as going out there and just performing to your best.
David Pollack joining us here on the Southern Beat to, of course, recap the beauty that was Monday night. If you were a Georgia fan, if you're a Bama fan, maybe you didn't feel as much, but joining us here again. You've got access to these guys, and you're able to talk with Kirby. You're able to talk with Nick Saban. With the Georgia side of this game, the questions were how much would they respond and bounce back from the first meeting. Did you get a sense while talking with them, or maybe even, I don't know if you got to see a practice or anything of the such during the preparation, that this one was going to be different?
Yeah, I mean, you knew it was going to be different because, you know, circumstances aren't always the same. And listen, we're always trying to find out about motivation and motivation and motivation. And bowl games, we do that all the time. Like, how do we figure out the motivation? Bama, the last time Georgia and Bama played, was getting crapped on by everybody, and nobody believed in them. And Nick Saban goes to the podium and goes, yummy rat poison, thank you. Like, how often do they ever get an opportunity to be in that role? And they relished that role. They loved it, and they came out hungry and played their best game. I thought Georgia came out as a team that was fat and happy, that, you know, like they were the ones getting praised, and they knew the game didn't matter as much. And I'm not saying they didn't want to beat Alabama. I'm just saying that when you're back in the corner and you're defensive, you're going to fight with everything you have. And I think Bama did a great job. I thought Bama played their best game, and I thought Georgia played their worst. And I thought it would even out. That didn't necessarily mean that I thought Georgia was going to, you know, guaranteed to get a win because of it. I thought the motivation side of it was evened out, and everybody was playing for a championship, and it was going to be a more competitive game because of that.
Is that indicative of a special group, David, where, I mean, you know, Kirby had talked about as well the conditioning level and everything else being challenged in that first game, and kind of a knock against this team, I mean, where they took it personally. Do you think that it's kind of one of those things when something like that is thrown at you, that there are certain guys who will say, like, hell it is, or that there are also other guys who say, oh, there's not much I can do about that. I'm just going to have to accept who I am.
Well, I think a lot of people, no, not a lot of people, most everybody in the world wants it. Like, they want to be successful. They want to be great. Very few are willing to do what it takes. And those guys made it known, like, listen, we're going to stay after practice and run more gassers, and we're going to get in better shape, and we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. So it takes a special group, man. And that group was a lot like Nick Saban's group last year, where you know, they were led amongst the teammates. Like, you could hear, like, Nick talked about that team. He was like, this is, we got this taken care of. Like, these guys are policing themselves. N'Kobe Dean, you could see it, man. Like, it was, you know, when near the goal line, when Tindall messed up and lets Latu come across his face and, you know, get N'Kobe goes right to him. He's like, bro, what are you doing? Like, fix that crap. And the next play, you know, Tindall gets a sack on Bryce Young, and N'Kobe goes and celebrates with him. Like, you got to have guys in the locker room that can be those guys that are just dudes, like Trayvon Walker, or dudes like Jordan Davis. And, you know, they had so many of those guys on this team this year that you didn't have to worry about the all the other crap, because you know that the team wanted it and they would police themselves.
David Pollack, ESPN, former Georgia Letterman. You know him well, College Game Day, everything of the such. Join us here on the Southern Beat. Stetson Bennett, I know from us having you on the Chuck Oliver Show, you had talked about back, I believe it was in October, of how huge a fan you were of this guy. And you said it wasn't a doubt in your mind who Georgia's quarterback was. I mean, what can be said about this guy where you've got certain people who are saying he ain't it? He's not going to be the reason that they win a national title. As a matter of fact, he's going to be a reason they don't win it. For him to be able to block that out, David, and to go out there and have the performance he did, and to top it all off, to have the performance he did at the most important time in the game in the fourth quarter, what does that mean to you?
Well, it just goes to show you, man, it's not always about all the five stars and all the hype and everything that goes with it. Stetson Bennett's been benched a bunch. He walked on at Georgia. He had no SEC offers. He's running scout team and being Baker Mayfield back in the day, and leaves because he thinks he wants to go play football somewhere and goes to junior college. And then guess what? Comes back to Georgia, and Kirby offers him a scholarship to basically be the backup quarterback and to be, you know, a scout team guy. And because he loves Georgia with everything in him, his dream since he was two was to be a Georgia quarterback. But then what happens? You come into summer camp and you're fourth on the depth chart, third or fourth, and you're barely getting any reps. And but what happens more importantly is JT Daniel gets banged up, and Stetson Bennett is thrown into the lineup, not because he was a five-star, Beck was a four-star, Vandergriff was a five-star, because you could trust him, because you knew what he was made of. He's made of the right stuff, man. What's inside of his chest, how he handles things is just, it's amazing. He never gets flustered. You could tell his heart rate's always steady as can be. And man, what a story. I mean, this will be a story that we talk about for years and years and years and come. And how about this? Bama and all their recruits and all their firepower and all their NFL guys, and Kirby does it with a walk-on, with a two-star. You know, like, that's it's just crazy that's the way the story was written. But, you know, everybody lost belief and hope in Stetson Bennett except for Stetson Bennett. He didn't. He knew what he could do. He knew what his dream was, and he went and chased, and he said, everybody else who doesn't believe, forget y'all. I don't care about y'all. I'm going to get this done, and he did.
Couple more for you, David. Again, David Pollack joining us here on the Southern Beat. It seems like there's a common theme with teams like this year's Georgia team. And, you know, I mentioned the Red Sox earlier, the Cubs. Any other organizations that have just struggled and strained for so long to be able to reach the top of the mountain, you just got to be different. I mean, with that 04, you know, Boston Red Sox team, it was the Cowboys, whatever they called themselves, and they basically said, hey, we came back from 3-0 against the Yankees. The World Series isn't going to mean anything. The Cubs, it was, we finally got back here. We got this group. We can do this. What do you think was different about this 2021 team?
It's what I said to you earlier. It's the players. The players are different. You know, like, the players – believe Jordan Davis staying for another year, N'Kobe Dean being the leader he is. You know, the coaching staff obviously did an unbelievable job. The defense was, you know, the front defensive front seven is one of the greatest defensive front sevens I've ever seen. It is the greatest since I've been covering the game for, you know, 12 years or so. Just the most overall talent and physicality and just freakazoids up front. So it's a combination of everything. I mean, but the players, I think, the way they believed and the way they led and the way they cared and the way they took it upon themselves to compete and week in and week out. And I mean, it's just, it was special, and that's why they got rewarded.
One final one for you. What does this mean for you now? I mean, does it make you hungrier as a Georgia Letterman, former Georgia Letterman and a lifelong fan of this team to see it again? Or is it now hey, you know what? I've seen it happen in my life.
I hadn't seen it happen in my life before this, to be clear. So I've never seen this. And here's the deal. I think you immediately, you know, like me and Reese Davis on our podcast, you know, turn the page next year. Who's number one? I'm just telling you, if I have my fan hat on, I'm like, I don't give a dang. Like, I don't care. It happened. You know, you're national champs. You can never take that away. So I think, you know, you're dang excited and you're happy. And the next year's coming and it's going to come fast. And the transfers are already, you can see, already leaving. And the transfer portal is going to be a real thing. And I know Kirby. Kirby's already turned the page to the next, and he's already recruiting, and he's already setting the parade up, and the parade's going to be a big recruiting day and signing day, you know, I think January 3rd, of first Wednesday in February. And so it's you move on, but man, you're not going to forget this moment. You're not going to forget where you are, who you shared it with, and how important it was.
Well, like you said, differentiating between the two, David, as a fan, couldn't be happier for you. And as a professional, man, what another great season on ESPN this year. And can't wait to see what comes up in 2022 for you.
Appreciate it, my dude. Y'all have a good one.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
As promised, right now we go to a man who you knew very well on Twitter. You can find him on Twitter at Wes_InShip. Of course, you get it. Blankenship. He is Wes Blankenship, who now goes by National Championship on Twitter, as where you can find him under his name, part of Outsider, at Wes Ship on Instagram as well. He is Wes Blankenship of Coffee Town as well. I think we hit it all, didn't we?
What's up, Dan?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, my man. I've never been better.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you know, your existence your entire life has kind of been, I hope they can, but now they have. What has they have been like for a lifelong Georgia fan and alum?
Dan, it's not disappointed. You know, you wonder, you know, what's it going to look like to see the confetti fall for my team? Not just once, you know, but the Braves and now Georgia in the same season. I still just can't believe it. I think that's where I'm at right now. I'm happy. I've rewatched the game a couple times because ESPN does the mega cast. So the most recent one was the Georgia radio version, which was pretty cool to see that synced up. If I'm really feeling kind of sinister, I might go back and rewatch the Alabama radio version too. Just to hear that version. But no, man, it's been amazing. It's been magical to be there with my friends leading up to the game, to see you guys, your merry band of knuckleheads that traveled up for the game as well. It did not disappoint. The whole experience, the game, and everything leading up to it.
When did you allow yourself to believe that it was true?
So I don't know if I was naive or if I just had a steady buzz of Tito's and a couple Bud Lights going into the game, but I always believed that Georgia would pull it out. And when I have gone back to rewatch the game, it surprises me that I was that confident the whole time. Now, was I irate at the weird fumble call on Stetson? Yeah. I was like, here we go again. You know, Bama's going to get a little bit of help. But I don't know what it was, man. I just had a calm confidence that that was going to be Georgia's night, regardless of what happened. And it was. And the defense set the tone early in the game. You know, a lot of people didn't like to watch that. I think a lot of diehard football fans did enjoy that defensive struggle at the beginning. And then you saw things start to open up a little bit more in the second half. I think the play calling of Todd Monken was great, but Matt Luke switching things up on the offensive line for Georgia is also like a moment that I didn't recognize in my seats at the time. But going back and watching on TV, putting Broderick Jones in, that I felt like helped Georgia loosen things up and start to feel themselves like they had for a lot of this season. And the defense just continued to do what it did. Now, of course, you know, there are a few big plays that felt like Alabama was going to, you know, potentially take a bigger lead than they did. But Georgia's red zone defense, I think, is what really kept me feeling confident all night that they were going to find a way to pull it out in the fourth quarter.
He is part of Coffee Town fame. He is part of The Outsider, Shannon Terry's vehicle as part of that group with On3 and everyone else. You can also find him on the Marty Smith podcast on Outsider as well. He is Wes Blankenship, and he joins us here. Like I said, a lifelong dog fan, a alum of the school. He has got it all going for him right now. Wes, who'd you immediately think of as soon as the clock hits zero and you saw all those white jerseys and red helmets running on the field and excitement of knowing, yep, we've done it? And then you see the ribbon boards, the video boards flashing the Circle G and the national championship.
I think the first person I thought of that wasn't there that I wish was there with me was my brother, no doubt. He's a few years younger than I am, but you know, we jumped on the Georgia train as fans, as kids, and the David Green, you know, basically when Mark Richt took over. I mean, I was, you know, a Bulldog fan, you know, my whole life because that was the expectation when I left the womb. But I think when we really became diehard fans was, you know, around that time, 2001. And when I was a kid, I listened to Larry Munson while I was doing my chores so I could earn a few bucks each week before the game would come on. And that's what I did to keep myself, you know, thinking about how much I hated sweeping the floors and Windexing the mirrors and everything. I was listening to Larry Munson talk about the pregame prep. And that stuck with me until he stopped doing it. And I came to appreciate this team through the eyes of a guy that did see a champion. And then I learned what it felt like to wish that you could see a champion again. And that was my whole life. I mean, that's 20 years of being associated with this team, being invested in them. And obviously that shifted when I got to college and started to, you know, cover them in a professional capacity as a photographer, student journalist. Gave up a lot of tailgate opportunities with a lot of my friends to work in college and, you know, take in the team's journey that way. And then after graduating, I covered them in local news for several years as well. So my appreciation, my interaction, my engagement with the team has kind of wavered. You know, how big of a fan was I allowed to be? You know, professionally, I wasn't supposed to be that big of one while I was on the clock. But I always, you know, was bleeding red and black, of course. And I'm grateful that I got to take it in this week as a fan, going up with a bunch of friends. And, you know, my phone actually died right at the end of the game. And for a moment, I was like, man, I wish I could get some pictures of this. But I was like, I'm with five other dudes. All their phones work. They can take pictures for me. I'm just going to take this in through my eyeballs, man. And there haven't been many moments in Georgia football history for me where I've been able to do that. I've either had a camera on my shoulder or a microphone in my hand or cell phone in my hand. And it was, for lack of any other better word that I can think of right now, it was magic. It was real magic.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Again, Wes Blankenship joining us here on the Southern Beat with Dan Matthews. Those of you listening to 6A The Fan in Atlanta, you know Brian Hoyt, and I was nudged while talking with you, Wes, of ask him what he thought of me. So when did you think of our beloved Hoyt?
So much like the Natty didn't disappoint, my first real engagement encounter with Brian Hoyt at St. Elmo with you and Los, and pretty impressive roster at our table of drinkers and Georgia fans alike. Didn't disappoint either, Hoyt. So it was. I will think back on this trip and that night at St. Elmo, seeing the coaches' wives up at the front of the restaurant, Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler at their tables, Eli Gold when we walked in, you know, people calling the dogs. It looked like that guy from social media, people seem to think that that dude got the cops called on him for calling the dogs. I think we independently confirmed at our table that night that he had a few run-ins within the restaurant earlier that night as well. So the story, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, right, though. That guy absolutely went to prison for calling the dogs. So I'll think back on that very fondly. Appreciate Hoy for getting me in there and the reservation. And, man, that was a great night. That was really special, too.
Yeah, I think that my sinuses are still wide open with that cocktail sauce from the shrimp cocktail. Man, that, woo, man, it just gets right up in there. But, no, good times for sure. As, you know, Wes, you know, just going forward with this, I mean, we'll end on this one, maybe one more. But, like, where do you go from here now? Like, where does your Georgia fandom take you? Like, is it just kind of, hey, I got it, it's gravy? Or is it now, man, I got to have it again?
Hopefully to sleep for a little bit, because I'm still not caught up on that. Man, I was talking to a couple Alabama fans that were sitting near our seats at the game, and when it became apparent that we were going to win, you know, after that Ringo pick six, I just turned to him and I said, look, man, like, they were great sports. All the ones that I ran into, all the Alabama fans I ran into were excellent. Like, they seemed genuinely happy for us to see it happen. And I just looked at him. I said, man, we don't want to be y'all. Y'all have the dynasty. We respect the hell out of that. And if Kirby brings us that, I'll love it. But we don't want to be y'all. We just wanted to see us beat you one time when Nick Saban was still there, so there was never any kind of asterisk about it. And we just wanted to see that it could actually happen. And the guy I said that too said, well, you know what, man, y'all saw it tonight. Congratulations. And that's all I could really ask for, Dan, is just to see it one time. And I'm not going to be greedy. That's what I said leading up to this game for years. I just want to see it one time. And I've seen it one time now, and if I see it more times after this, then yes, I'll take it. But I'll never forget this first one, man.
No, I hear you, man. Again, Wes Blankenship at Wes_inship on Twitter, part of Outsider, and also to part of the Marty Smith podcast on the Outsider as well. Of course, I can't get you out the door with asking where there'll be a special where Georgia had allowed Coffee Town's broadcast team to be a part of the national championship game, or in any type of impersonation as part of this. Is there anything that we have coming down the tracks, Wes?
I'm thinking about whether or not that's a good idea. You know, when you're a hungry, you know, non-affiliated Twitter personality, you can get away with some copyright things. But what I've learned is when you have a boss and you work for a company, the copyright infringement becomes less likely of a bridge that you're willing to cross. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see what I can try to come up with that doesn't, you know, lead to me getting a cease and desist. But I will not say no.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's all we can ask for, because we know how creative of a dude you are, and if the opportunity is there, we know that the door will be walked through. That is for sure. Wes, buddy, always great talking with you, man. It was awesome hanging out with you this weekend. And also, too, congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. Likewise. Great to see y'all. We'll always have fond memories of that trip, and y'all are a part of it. So I appreciate it.
All right, great stuff from David. Great stuff from Wes Blankenship. Two guys that love their school in Athens like nobody's business. And I'm probably pretty sure that we'll be seeing them in Athens on Saturday when they celebrate the team there with their short parade down Lumpkin and then the dog walk and then back into Sanford Stadium for a rally and speeches and all that kind of stuff for dog fans to be able to go inside Sanford Stadium one more time before the fall. And that's going to be something that I know a lot of people are looking forward to, because usually after the football season is done, I mean, if you're on the Field Street Bridge and you're walking by and you look in and you see, the G is not there. There's no paint on the field. It's kind of a little bit green. The hedges, not fully yet, all those different things. And then maybe every once in a while you get a concert and, of course, graduation and everything of the such. But I think that Georgia fans are definitely looking forward to a mid-January date inside Sanford Stadium for a chance to be able to celebrate the college football playoff national champions. But I want to end today's show by talking to Georgia fans about being a champion and just the feeling it is when you finally reach this point, is because I know there are a lot of you out there who are dog fans who, as soon as the game was over, you thought about who might not have been there with you. You thought about maybe your dad, your mom, your grandfather, your grandmother, somebody that you loved in your life that shared the love of the dogs with you that you didn't have a chance to pick up the phone and FaceTime them or even call. And when your team wins a championship and you want to share it with your friends or family, you don't pick up the phone and say hello. You pick up your phone and you say, how about them? Like, that's your hello, is how about them? And for those of you out there who didn't get that chance, this one's for you. This one's definitely for you, where you wish that you had had every single opportunity to watch it with them. Because much like when the Braves won the world title, those of you who listen to the show know that I'm in Atlanta and I work on the local side of radio in Atlanta. And I just remembered how it was everybody talking about, man, I remember watching the Braves on TBS. I remember going to games at old Fulton County Stadium, Turner Field, and now Truist Park. And being there with my dad or being there with my family and all these different things, is that nostalgia is what you immediately think of when this happens. And for dog fans with this national title win, that's immediately what you thought of. I mean, the video that was put out there, and I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but just expertly done by a Georgia fan of the throw by Bryce Young at the end of the montage. And it is right as he is about to catch the interception. In black and white, it's the flashbacks to the answered prayer at Jordan-Hare, the Dobb nail boot against Tennessee with Joshua Dobbs' Hail Mary to beat Georgia a few years ago in Kirby Smart's first season, the losses to Alabama, just all of the heartbreak that you endured if you're a Georgia fan over the years, and it's kind of one of those, you know, it flashes before your eyes at that point. And all of that, it was, you know what? I had all of that. Now I have this. And it just, what an amazing night. And I think also, too, as well, a few people that people might not know about that I think deserve extra praise during this national title celebration for Georgia. Number one, anybody who is a Georgia football fan or a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs knows about Claude Felton. And if you don't, you need to know about Claude Felton. He is Georgia sports information. He is Georgia athletics. I mean, Georgia athletics is nothing without Claude Felton, and he has been there in that corner office in the Butts Mirror building for a very long time, and he is immediately somebody. My good buddy Bill Shanks, as soon as it was known that Georgia was going to win the game, said, man, I'm just so happy for Claude. And I said, absolutely, me too. Claude's been incredibly good to me in my life. I mean, the times that I was out of a job and looking for freelance work, Claude Felton would pick up the phone and call people and vouch for me. Even catching on at Dickey Broadcasting Company in Atlanta, Claude Felton, when it got back to him that I was probably going to catch on there, he put in a good word for me and said, absolutely, you need to bring that guy on. I'll always be incredibly thankful to Claude Felton, and I'm just so happy for him. Former athletic director Greg McGarrity, who left and is now with the Gator Bowl, I believe, down in Jacksonville. But he, somebody that deserves a huge thank you from Georgia fans, I think, for not only having the foresight to bring Kirby Smart to Athens, but then also too, to lay the foundation for the facilities to be built there and for the support system that Kirby needed and everything else of the such for the Bulldogs to be able to get to this point. Georgia fans, you need to thank Greg McGarrity. And I know that some people were not the largest Greg McGarrity fans, but he is somebody that is a huge part of this as well. And then, of course, I'm so glad that people are remembering Coach Mark Richt and his just influence on this Georgia program in a positive light, because I understand the angst towards Mark Richt in terms of not being able to win a national title, the losses in huge matchups, the two SEC championships at the beginning part of his tenure, and then not being able to really get off that 10-win plateau for the longest time. I get all of that. Georgia football is not in the position it's in right now without Mark Richt leading that program and setting the foundation for what Kirby Smart was able to build on and to enhance recruiting and be able to bring in even better talent that they had before, because Mark Richt had good talent come through those doors in Athens and play for the Georgia Bulldogs during his time. It showed you with the results on the field. But Georgia football is not hoisting the college football playoff national title on Monday night without Mark Richt being the head coach for as long as he was at Georgia and for the contributions that he'd had. So I know that there's so many more I'm leaving out, but for the Georgia fans out there, gosh, man, just enjoy it. I mean, you know, some people, you know, I saw a photo that somebody had posted of somebody carrying the, like, a small urn of their loved ones to the game. And I said, I get it. I absolutely get it. Because with your loved one that you have there, you're saying, gosh, they would have loved to have been here for this. And you know what? If I'm going to see it happen, I want them here with me. And, I mean, just probably the emotions that came over that person, too, as well, of just saying, you know what? Gosh, how amazing would it have been if I could have hugged my loved one right now, being able to see this. And I mean, the tears, everything of the such. Guys, 41 years is a long, long time to not have a national championship. But guess what, Georgia fans, you get to enjoy it. And for those of you that get to enjoy this with your loved ones right now, enjoy it with them. I mean, because as it just showed you, 41 years, it shows you just how damn hard it is to win these things. And now we'll see what the future holds for the Dogs. I mean, Kirby Smart talked about it as well, that you got to remain hungry and you got to be able to try to build off this and get back to this point again. And I think with the talent and the coaching staff that he's put together, the support system that he has there in Athens, I don't think there is any reason to believe that this is going to be a one-off thing. I think there's many reasons to believe that this is going to be a continued thing in Athens for years to come. I want to thank David Pollock for joining us today here on the Southern Beat. Also, Wes Blankenship as well. Both of those guys, just amazing guys to talk with. And I always love talking football with David Pollock, and also, too, talking with a very creative mind and a great Georgia fan in Wes Blankenship. And I want to thank you, the listeners out there, for listening today here on the Southern Beat. Until next time, I'm Dan Matthews. It's been awesome to talk the College Football Playoff National Championship with you right here on the Southern Beat.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.